Welcome to another Breezy Breakfast. Today, we learn about Royal City Science. It is a grassroots initiative working to establish a science center in the city of Guelph. The vision is to create a state-of-the-art facility for informal science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education. The goal is to ignite curiosity, build confidence, and inspire the inner scientists in us all. Science and education have the power to combat the global challenges we face. The first steps happen right here in our community. Our guests are Kate House and Professor Joanne O'Mara. Kate is a science communicator and advocates with the nonprofit organization The Planetary Society. Professor Joanne O'Mara teaches physics at the University of Guelph. She is the chair of the board of Royal City Science. Listen while Joanne and Kate share their knowledge of science, religion, politics, and ethics. Hear them explain how science can cut through pseudoscience and misinformation. Find out how you can support this initiative by drinking locally brewed beer. Clearly, a science center in Guelph would be a quantum leap into the future. Without further ado, building enthusiasm for a science center for Guelph.
Good morning, everyone, at the early hour of 8 a.m. in Guelph, according to the grandfather clock. We are back at another Breezy Breakfast and a Breezy Breakfast podcast and CFRU radio show. Today, we are joined by Professor Joanne O'Mara and Kate Howells from a very inspiring project offering their ideas on whether Guelph has the capacity to have a science education center and make that an anchor for Guelph education and Guelph tourism. This particular suggestion is one that is very important now as we are seeing a period of science denial and a need perhaps for the resurrection of why science matters within the community and nationally. Now, before we go, I would like to make a statement of acknowledgement on our past history and past indigenous roots. As we gather, we are reminded that Guelph is situated on treaty land that is steeped in rich indigenous history and home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. As a city, we have a responsibility for the stewardship of the land on which we live and work. Today, we acknowledge the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation of the Anishinaabeg peoples on whose traditional territory we are meeting. And with that, I would like to greet both Professor O'Mara and Ms. Howells, who are here today with what I think is a very promising proposal. Just to give you a bit of history, I've heard of Kate for many years because she's a friend of my stepdaughter's, but we've never really got to meet until there was a baby shower for our daughter, Anne. At which point Kate started talking about her past experience working with people like Bill Nye, the science guy, and looking out into space and wondering about the vastness of the universe. She mentioned that she was thinking of working on a science center project for Guelph, something similar to, but more regionally oriented, that would be akin to the science center in Toronto or Science North. I liked the idea. I thought it was a great idea. And Kate and I, over wine and cookies and chocolate, kept talking about this. And Kate said, well, why don't you meet me and a few other science-inspired individuals at our favorite plenary, the Woolly. So we did. And we sat around a table and talked about this and talked about the challenges. I had suggested to Joanne, who is here with us today, and to Kate and to others, that one of the first things that would be important is to pitch the community on this. That if you want this to have legs, we need the community to appreciate how important science has been in the past of Guelph and how important it will be in the future. We have a world-class university here that has made great advances in areas such as agriculture, veterinary sciences, and dare I even say that we should not forget that we are home of one of very few Nobel Prizes in physics, Professor Donna Strickland, who was educated in Guelph. Similarly, we have two other Nobel Prizes in Guelph. Professor Dr. James Urbinski from Medicine Sans Frontières received the Nobel Prize for Medicine Sans Frontières some 10 to 15 years ago. And we also have another one in the realm of economics. This is no small feat for any community. So a science center is something that if we can get the critical capacity for it, if we can make that quantum leap, we should be able to anchor in Guelph. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Kate and Joanne to make the big pitch for why science matters today. So over to you, Kate and Joanne. And Kate, I guess since I talked to you first, I'll let you start off with this and you can pass the ball to Joanne when you feel it's appropriate.
Thank you so much, Phil. And thank you everybody for being here to hear our pitch. We have been working on this project of trying to establish a science center in Guelph since 2019. I got on board in 2020, but Joanne and her co-founder, Orbax, who is many of you will know as a science presenter in Guelph with the university, they've been working on this for much longer. So I'm going to take us through a sort of background on why a science center makes sense for Guelph. And then I'll hand it over to Joanne to talk about what we've done so far and what we have coming up next. And then I'll wrap up with some information on what we're looking for from the community and how you all, if you're interested, can help us work towards this goal. So why a science center in Guelph? First of all, I want to talk about what a science center is, because you just assume everybody knows, but you never want to assume too much. So a science center is a place where people can engage with science in ways that are immersive, hands-on, and fun. It's usually targeted towards children, so students with their teachers, school groups, families, but also generally offers programming for adults, people of all ages. It would be a physical location in Guelph that houses interactive exhibits and displays, hosts events and special lectures and presentations, and is all designed to be engaging, fun, and really all about active learning, not just sitting and listening or reading something, but learning through doing. So I also want to take a step back and say, what do I mean by science? Because this is another term that can just be tossed around without necessarily unpacking what it means. So science is the way that we come to know things about the world that we live in. It's also the collection of stuff that we know about the world we live in, and also how we apply that knowledge. So this includes all kinds of things. It includes engineering, math, technology, we often call STEM, but it also includes the arts, social sciences, history, culture, all the context in which we understand the world that we live in. It includes Western sciences, it includes indigenous knowledge, it includes local perspectives and global perspectives. Science is fundamentally multidisciplinary, multicultural, and a science center would reflect that. That's really important to us. Because a lot of the time, the critique that science can get is that it is very narrow and it sort of exists in a silo and ignores other facets of life. And that's, I think, the wrong way of looking at science, and that's not how we would approach it. So, oh, and by the way, if I'm not looking at the chat, so if people are putting questions in, I think we'll take time at the end to answer questions, and I think Tanya will organize that. So in terms of why do we want a science center in Guelph, there are a few real problems that a science center would help solve, and there are a few unique opportunities that Guelph has to offer. So one of the first problems is that there just isn't a place, a physical location in Guelph where kids and families and adults can learn science outside of school. There are organizations in Guelph doing extracurricular science learning, but there's no physical place. I grew up in Guelph and I remember school trips to the Science Center, which are the Ontario Science Center in Toronto, which is 100 kilometers away. Having a science center that far away means that trips to it are time consuming, complicated, and costly. You're not going to just casually pop over to the Science Center when you have to drive 100 kilometers each way. And school groups aren't going to be able to have regular programming involving the Science Center when you have to drive to another city to get there. So the solution that building a Science Center would offer is that there would be a place here in town in our community serving Guelph and the surrounding areas that offers this kind of enrichment, this educational enrichment. So I encourage you to imagine, and maybe this is true for some of you, that you have a young person in your life, maybe a child or a grandchild or a niece or a nephew or somebody who is passionate about space or dinosaurs or geology or technology or something in the sort of sciences. If you had a local science center, somewhere where you could take them on weekends, take them after school, enroll them in a club, enroll them in March break programming, you could fuel that passion so much more than you can now when you have to travel out of town to give that kid any kind of immersive science experience to encourage their interest. So this is the solution we want to provide, is something here for our people, for our community, and anybody in the vicinity who wants to come and learn about science. Another problem that Phil touched on is that there are a lot of science-related issues right now in the world that are incredibly pressing that people are refusing to engage in. We've seen it with pandemic denial, anti-masking, vaccine hesitancy. We see it with climate change deniers. We see people being swayed by politics and the internet and the media because their understanding of science and their attitudes towards science are not solid. They're not positive. So this is something that has serious impacts. And a lot of adults, once you leave the school program, you don't have that many opportunities to be taught, to learn, to engage in learning in a positive way. And a lot of people develop negative attitudes towards science in particular, because it's something that maybe they didn't do well in school, or maybe they don't see as accessible to them. There are a lot of barriers to science learning and to identification with science, with the culture of science, because it is a pretty limited culture. I mean, there's the stereotype of the scientist is the white man in a lab coat of a certain age, you know, and if you don't identify with that, maybe you don't have, you don't feel that science is for you. You don't feel that you can confidently engage in it. So this is the kind of, this sort of sets the stage for people to be swayed by things like politics and the internet. So a science center in Guelph could work with adults in Guelph, people who are typically overlooked by a lot of science programming, to nurture more positive relationships with science, more positive identification with science, confidence, engaging in science topics. You know, we want to discourage that feeling of, oh, science, I don't understand science, I can't do that. Because that's something you hear all the time is, oh, that's, you know, I'm not a science person. We want to show everybody that, yes, you can be a science person. It doesn't matter how long ago you took a science class. It doesn't matter if you know math. I'm not good at math. I love science. So there's ways that you can engage with adults and make science learning fun and showcase people in science who are outside of that sort of stereotype that I described earlier. So these are all things that a science center can bring when you have programming locally that is science oriented. It can help break down some of those negative attitudes and make learning more accessible. Another thing that is like very specific and very applicable to the issues that we're seeing today is that you can actually target specific problems with outreach programming. And Joanne's going to talk about something we did with COVID vaccine information sessions. This is some of the virtual programming we've already done. But this kind of thing where when there's a specific issue that's science related that is affecting our community, we can have programming through the Science Center here in Guelph that targets that exact issue and makes it very relevant to what people are experiencing here in a way that you might not get if you're just engaging with, you know, the CBC's coverage of an issue or something. We want to have things be very locally focused and very relevant to people. Another big problem that we're seeing in the world today is that people are very aware that climate change is a serious issue, serious threat, big problem, but they don't know what they can do. They don't know what is being done locally. They don't know, there's this feeling of of frustration and helplessness about, you know, what do you do about a problem so big? So a science center here in Guelph could help tackle that problem by engaging with people directly, finding out, you know, what is happening in Guelph? What are Guelph, what is Guelph government doing? What are Guelph businesses doing? What is the provincial government doing? What are the policies in place here? What are the issues that need to be worked on here? And what can you do, given the specific circumstances in which we all live here in this community and in the surroundings? What can we all do here and now to impact change? Because what you can do here and now is going to be different from place to place. So again, having a local focus, I think it gives people the opportunity to really dig into the issue in a way that's less abstract than what you might hear when people are talking broadly about, you know, global solutions to this global problem. Environmental stewardship is one of Royal City Science's core values, and it's something that we're going to ensure is woven into all of our programming, all of our exhibits, as well as once we get to the point where we're building a physical space for the Science Center, it's going to be designed and built in environmentally sustainable ways. And that is something that we can also showcase and highlight and encourage in other builds in the city. So really setting an example by how we do things, as well as doing lots of programming that helps people understand what the impact they can have on the environment. So those are some of the problems that we face as a community that the Science Center can help address. I also want to talk about a couple of unique opportunities that Guelph and the area presents that make this really fertile ground for a Science Center. So the first one, Phil mentioned this, we have an abundance of science expertise here in our community. We have a world-class university. We're surrounded by other world-class universities in neighboring cities as well. We have, you know, the agricultural expertise, veterinary science expertise, environmental science, space science, many sciences are represented at Guelph. Waterloo has the sort of Silicon Valley of Canada. It's really vibrant tech industry. There's the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics, which is doing just mind-bogglingly cool stuff. There's a lot of really exciting science happening in and around Guelph. This is an excellent opportunity to tap into the expertise that's happening here. So a science center in Guelph, not only would it showcase that there is exciting and important and impactful science being conducted in this community, sort of showing people what the university is doing, but also we would be able to draw on these experts to provide programming. So when we're designing an exhibit about like the water cycle, there are plenty of water science experts and water environmental advocates in Guelph whose expertise we can draw on to make sure that what we're presenting is locally relevant as well as you know, of the highest standards of science education. We also have a lot of opportunity to work with students and grad students at the university, providing placement opportunities for them, educational experience for them. And I think it's just a great opportunity to pull together a lot of the expertise that we have here. Aside from all that expertise that I just described, we also have an abundance of science outreach groups in Guelph. A lot of them are environmental focused, nature focused, but there's a whole array of science outreach groups. None of them have a physical home in the way that a science center would provide. And our approach is very much collaborative rather than competitive. We don't want to put these other science outreach groups out of business. We want to offer a hub where they can collaborate with each other, work with us, reach more people, bring, you know, each group brings their own focus, their specialization, and their unique expertise. And I think by collaborating together, we can do more to reach the community. And again, we've already started work on this. We're already collaborating a lot with other groups in Guelph, and Joanne will talk a bit about that. Another opportunity that I want to talk about that's really important to us is, as I mentioned, that science isn't just about, you know, physics, chemistry, math, like the sort of traditional Western sciences. It's also, there are many different ways of knowing the world that we live in, investigating the world, understanding it, and using that knowledge. And Indigenous sciences from this area and from Canada, Turtle Island as a whole, there's a lack of representation, a lack of integration in a lot of science centers. What you see most of the time is that there's a science center, and then they have maybe an Indigenous sciences exhibit kind of tucked off somewhere. We have an opportunity here, since we're building something from the ground up, to really have Indigenous sciences and Western sciences, multicultural perspectives on science, all woven together from the get-go. I think that this would provide really unique learning opportunities for the people who would be coming and visiting the Science Center, participating in the programming. And this is something really important to us. So again, from the ground floor, but we haven't even, we don't even know where the Science Center is going to be yet, but we're starting to do programming already, and we're trying to bring in Indigenous perspectives and Indigenous experts as much as we can right now. So that's something that is really important to us, and we think is a unique opportunity with building a new Science Center. So all in all, I hope I've convinced you that the conditions are just perfect for a Science Center in Guelph. There's a need and there are opportunities. So far from our conversations with the community, we found that there's a lot of support, a lot of enthusiasm. We just need to kind of mobilize all of that enthusiasm and build more momentum. So I will hand it over to Joanne now to talk about what we've actually done so far and what we have coming up next.
Great, thanks, Kate. I feel like between Kate's overview and Phil's amazing introduction, I almost don't really need to say anything more, but my job is to tell you about who we are, where our very short history, what we've accomplished in that fairly short period of time, and our immediate next steps. So who we are, first of all, we incorporated as a nonprofit organization at the very end of September in 2020. We called our official launch day November 14th, 2020, because that is actually the International Day for Science Centers and Science Museums, or something like that. I maybe got the acronym wrong, but that's the International Day for Science Centers. So that was our official launch day. So the board consists of Kate, whose day job is the Planetary Society, myself, I'm a professor in the Department of Physics at the University of Guelph, the great Orbax, who is also a staff member in the Department of Physics at the University of Guelph, and George Stakos, who is a consultant with Innovation Guelph. So that's our board. We also have a wider advisory group that we call them, and that's about 16 people. It fluctuates a bit, but it consists of people from the university, faculty and staff, but also we have some local high school teachers, we have some business leaders, science communicators, just general community members who are science enthusiasts who are passionate about this idea and want to help get it off the ground. Phil mentioned in the comments, Orbax is a local legend. He absolutely is. And I've had the great pleasure of working with him in the Department of Physics for many years now. And he and I are the co-founders of Royal City Science. And it really started because Orbax and I do a lot of community outreach for the department. So going into schools, organizing events on campus, and we got talking. So an event that we've organized the last few years before COVID, 2018 and 2019, was a fantastic partnership with the Guelph Civic Museum. So I teach a course called Science Communication to our physics majors. They're required to take it. They don't very much appreciate that at the beginning of the semester, but I convinced them by the end that it wasn't so bad, really. But the project, the group project at the end of the semester for that course, is to design and build Science Center interactive exhibits for grades 6, 7, 8 students. We give them a budget. We actually give them money that they can spend and build things. And then at the end, the last week of the semester, we held STEM Week at the Guelph Civic Museum. And the Civic Museum organized all of the registration for the students. And we had over 700 students come through the Guelph Civic Museum in the first year that we ran this. It was just a week. It was a very intense week. But all of the interactives that those students engaged with were designed and built by the third year physics students at the University of Guelph. And it was such a phenomenal success. The students loved it. The teachers loved it. everyone came back again the following year, 2019. We did the same thing again, and then COVID. But after the second year of offering it, Orvax and I were chatting kind of early, end of 2019, early 2020, about, you know, the partnership with the Civic Museum was great, but, you know, we've got a performing arts center, we've got a massive hockey arena, we've got, you know, all of these amazing public infrastructures in the city. Why don't we have a science center? And classic great Orvax and myself were like, well, how hard can it be? Come on, let's figure this out. So we started talking sort of January, February 2020. And then we had tons of meetings with people that we know in the science community who do sort of similar things, people in biology, people in computer science. And this, it just snowballed. People were like, yeah, we love this idea. We want to help. We want to get together. And so we incorporated, as I said, at the end of September. And we, it's a 100% volunteer run operation. And we've been working away since then, offering all kinds of programming. So we found we have done a strategic planning exercise with a great consultant from Capacity Canada. So we have our mission, vision, values figured out. We have a 5-year plan. We have also been engaging with the community already through an online survey that we launched on our opening in November of 2020. This is just a snapshot of one of the questions that we asked on the survey. We've had 142 responses so far, so that's encouraging. And we have, as Kate said, we've been doing programming since we launched. Now, we launched during a pandemic, so all of our programming has had to be either online, or if it's in person or physical, it has to be distanced in some way. So our very first event that we ran in December, so over the Christmas holidays for the elementary and high school students, was December 2020 to January 2021. And we called it Solar System Stroll. So what we did was we superimposed a map of the solar system on the city of Guelph. The sun was at St. George's Square downtown, and then all of the planetary stations were scattered around town at the appropriate scale distance from the sun for where you would find that planet. And when you got to the location, so you either went to our website and got a map that told you where to go directly, or if you wanted a bit more of a challenge, you got a clue that you had to decode and figure out where to find the station. When you got to the station, there was a QR code posted inside a window of a local business. You scan the QR code, it takes you to a website. It tells you something about the planet, or in this case, the sun. It gave you some fun experiments to do, a video to watch, and resources for kids to have over the Christmas holidays and do something fun. So it's kind of a bit of a scavenger hunt, learning about the planets. And we had great uptake, over 2,600 website visits during that period. Our next one was in April of 2021. So that was March break, which got shifted to April. And in April 2021, what we did was we ran Mission STEM Possible for the week. And every morning, a new video was released giving the participants their instructions for the day, some kind of activity to do, build your own rocket using baking soda and vinegar, or making your own water filtration system with things around the house. So they had an activity every morning, and then every afternoon at 3 o'clock, we hosted a live Q&A with an expert to have all the kids who had done the activities come together and talk about their successes and more commonly their failures, which were a lot of fun to talk about, and just ask questions about the related science of the day. So that went really well. We had great uptake with that. Last summer, Hillside was online again. So they actually asked us if we would like to do some science programming for kids for their rainbow stage type audience. And so we put together 4 videos on sort of workshops that kids could do at home again. So floating and sinking, bubbles, very summery kind of things, ice cream making, stargazing. And that was very well received as well. Kate mentioned this already. obviously, as scientists and trying to engage with the community, how could we not get involved in talking about COVID? So one of the people on our advisory group is working with COVID-19 Resource Canada. So he brought this to us, and we hosted two Q&A, live Q&A sessions, which were very well attended and some great, great questions. More recently, the second sort of Christmas holidays that we've now gone through since we established ourselves is we called 12 Days of Puzzlement. So this launched on December 20th, 2021. So just this past Christmas break. And every day, a new science-themed puzzle was posted to our website. And when you successfully completed the puzzle, you would get a pop-up window that gave you an unlock code. And then on day 13, you needed all 12 of those unlock codes to enter the final puzzle and get your treasure map, which directed you to a location at the Arboretum to find a little treasure chest and retrieve your prize for participating in our 12 Days of Puzzlement. And that went super well. We had over 5,000 page views with that activity. Second March break, 2022. The puzzles went over so well that we decided to do that again. And we had great participation for the March break masterminds. We had three levels of puzzles. So puzzles directed for kids in grades 1 to 4, 5 to 8, 9 to 12, and a different science discipline, a different type of puzzle came up each day for kids to participate. The most recent thing that we've been involved in is the H2 Awesome Festival. I don't know if anybody on here is aware of it, but it's a fantastic activity event that is hosted by the City of Guelph and Upper Grand District School Board and the Wellington Catholic District School Board. And their theme this year was Water Is, and then basically you could talk about anything related to water. And they asked us to do two sessions. And we had two panels, and all of the people that you see there are experts in water in some way at the University of Guelph, maybe engineering, maybe in wetlands conservation. I see Susan down at the bottom there. Our job was to curate these experts and make sure they're engaging and they can engage with the grade 6, 7, 8 students. And then for the first session, Orbax was the moderator. For the second session, I was the moderator. And with those two events, we reached over 3,000 local elementary school students. The dates for the Awesome Festival, H2 Awesome Festival, it starts on World Water Day and it ends on Earth Day, which I think is a really cool way to bookmark things or bookend things. Okay, so we've been in existence for a little over a year and a half maybe. And we have built a pretty great network based on, we've been doing this for a long time through our university responsibilities, but now sort of bringing together these different groups. So we've worked with the Ontario Agricultural College Outreach, we've worked with Nature Guelph, Civic Museum, Hillside, Creative Encounters, Let's Talk Science, Wild Ontario, all of those amazing groups. And we have had some support financially from some wonderful contributors. Innovation Guelph gave us a great donation in our first year. Department of Physics, my home, Integrative Biology, Biomedical Sciences, School of Environmental Sciences. We have a number of members on our advisory group from Environmental Sciences. Wellington Brewery, because I'll tell you about an upcoming event in a second, and Canada Post Community Foundation. I see Yorklands Green Hub being mentioned a few times. We have had a couple of meetings with Nora from Yorklands, and I did have a lovely walk through the property with her one day back in, I can't remember when it was, but we have had some great talks with her. So yes, that's definitely on our radar. So upcoming events, we've got some exciting upcoming events. I don't know if anybody on here likes beer, but we just recently, last month, were at Wellington for the day to brew a special beer. It's called Dark Matter Quantum Lager, and it is a blackberry flavored lager that is infused with meteorite. And we will be launching this on May 18th at the brewery. And that is a Wednesday evening. That evening, Jeff, the head brewer at Wellington, will be talking about the science of brewing. And I will be doing a fun little talk about the science of bubbles. And then you'll get to try the amazing meteorite infused beer. And a portion of the sales for Dark Matter are going to go to Royal City Science. So we're very excited about this partnership with Wellington. After May 18th, we have events for the next three Wednesday nights. And I can't remember off the top of my head which locations are which. Hopefully Kate will be able to throw that in the chat. May 25th, we have a talk on heart health. And then June 1st, we have a talk about space science. Kate is on tap for that. And we also have on our advisory group, Dr. Glynis Perrette, who is a local high school teacher, physics teacher. She did her undergraduate and doctorate here at the University of Guelph. And she worked with the Mars Rover team here in the Department of Physics. So Glynis has been involved in a NASA mission measuring soils and rocks on the surface of Mars. So she will be talking alongside Kate about all the, Kate's going to be talking about moons of the solar system, I believe. And Glynis will be talking about meteorites and tying that into the meteorite in the beer that you will get to taste there. And then the last session, June 8th, as Kate is saying in the chat, is going to be at Baker Street Station, and we'll be involving some University of Guelph experts in groundwater and environmental sustainability with someone from Wellington talking about their environmental sustainability focus in their brewing technique. So, yes, more information will be coming. Ticket sales for that will go towards Royal City Science. And again, if you buy the Dark Matter Quantum Lager at Wellington in their bottle shop, that will also partially support us too. So next steps, one thing we are working on is building out our website. So we have a website we have had since we launched, but the idea behind the wormhole is to have an online forum where all of the programmers that we've talked about and have collaborations with, they have a place where they can also promote and advertise their work and connect with the community. So the wormhole is something that we're working to get off the ground. And our next step is also we're looking to get funding to acquire, build, some portable pop-up science center exhibits, things that we could take to Hillside or the farmers market or local elementary schools to engage with the community and further kind of that that awareness and also support. So some things that we've got pictured here, so the center image of a man standing inside a bubble column. That's actually something that we built for STEM Week in 2018. So that's the second floor of the glass stairway at the Civic Museum. I don't know if you can picture that, but he's standing on a platform and there's a base that's got a bubble solution in it. And there's a string that you pull up and you can pull this column of bubbles up around you. The picture on the right is a portable planetarium. These cost probably something like $70,000, but they are about five, it depends on the size, 5 to 7 meter diameter inflatable domes that you can purchase off the shelf that you can take to elementary schools and set up in their gymnasium or take to, as I said, Hillside Festival. It includes the projector and we have the expertise to run these shows. So something like that, we put in a proposal to Canada Post Community Foundation for some matching funds. We do have, the Department of Physics has a donation of $50,000 from the estate of Jim Stevens. Many of you may know the name Jim Stevens. He was very much involved in Rotary groups in town and some of the local St. George's Church, I believe. He was a retired faculty member in our department, a beloved retired faculty member in our department. And he passed away last summer and he donated $50,000 to the department to further our outreach. And we are looking to partner that with some matching funds to buy a planetarium, portable planetarium. Some of the other things here, this is a square wheel tricycle. I don't know if anyone's ever seen this before. It's is a very popular installation to the Museum of Math in New York City. This isn't the one that's in New York City, it's fancier than that, but this is something that could be quite portable. The idea being, you know, it talks about surfaces, it talks about the math of the shapes and geometry, and it's just a kind of a fun little activity to do. The bottom left corner is Alex Smith and Shoshana Jacobs. Shoshana is one of our founding members of our advisory group, and they are both fantastic educators in integrative biology at the University of Guelph. And they run something called the Digital Forest. So this is a picture of them in the Dairy Bush by the university campus. And Alex has been taking GigaPan panoramic, massively high resolution images of the Dairy Bush every week, I believe, for years. And so he has this massive database that you can go into and look at the changing seasons. You can zoom in and see bugs on leaves. And they have a great program that they run for kids talking about the digital forest. And the picture in the bottom is an image from a project that was done by the National Film Board, actually. And it is a build your own igloo. And it's made out of styrofoam, and all of the blocks are perfectly shaped, and it's all about structures and stable structures and, again, geometry and the amazing ingenuity and engineering that goes into building an igloo. And kids just love it, right? You can build the thing, you can get inside it, and then there's a movie that the NFB put together on building igloos and understanding how they're made. And then the last image on the bottom right is about energy generation and looking at sustainable forms of energy production. And obviously that's a very permanent looking installation, but something themed along those lines that we could take to schools, maybe even something like a bicycle that you pedal that generates, you know, enough electricity to light a light bulb, right? So talking about how energy is generated, and then making the connection to wind turbines, making the connection to hydroelectric power dams and those kinds of things. So the idea being we can start now, continue the momentum of what we've been doing with the online programming. Now that we're gonna be able to get into places and do things face-to-face, have these exhibits that we can take with us. And then when we have a permanent space, this can be sort of the starting point, the seed to filling that space with amazing, engaging, interactive displays. So I'm gonna kick it back over to Kate now. Hopefully I haven't skipped over anything. I will say before I kick over to Kate, I will say these seem very much student focused, young person focused, and that's absolutely true. But as I said, with the Wellington collaboration, we are all about talking to everyone who will listen, whether they're 4 or 104, about the things that we're passionate about. So we definitely want to be organizing speaker series, doing like museum after dark type events for adults, science and art fusion events, things where you could have like a make and take kind of workshop, art events that are craft events that are science themed, making pottery, knitting, painting, doing photography of the night sky, all of these things. There's so many things that we want to do and we would love to do, and that would be really targeting families, kids in schools, adults, and also we do want to work with teachers. We very much want to provide them with professional development opportunities for elementary school teachers as well as high school teachers, where they can come and do a fun workshop, again, maybe like a make and take thing. Here's a great activity to do with your grade 4 kids. Here's the thing, build it, ask your questions, make sure you understand what's happening, and then you can go and engage with your kids in the classroom afterwards. The other major next step is continue the grant writing journey, which we've started and will be never ending, I know, but that is definitely a major focus for the next little while, and continuing to connect with the community. So now that I've checked my notes and I think I've covered everything, I will kick it back over to Kate.
Thanks, Joanne. Yes, so as you've just heard, we have done a lot during a pandemic and with no money, we have everything is run by volunteers. The sort of blessing in disguise of the pandemic is that because everything mostly had to be run online, that's something that you can do. If you've got volunteers providing content, you can do that for very cheap. I mean, we pay fees for having our website. We have, you know, administrative fees, et cetera. But now that things are opening back up, yeah, we want to buy exhibits. We want to build stuff. We want to have physical, interactive, engaging things that we can take to schools, we can take to events, up until the point where we can afford to actually build a science center. So one of the things that we need now is funding. So we recently got our charitable status from the CRA. So donations are tax deductible, which is a huge step forward for us. So if you want to make a contribution, our website, royalcityscience.ca. But also if you have contacts in industry, we have so far not really had that much success in getting sponsorships or contributions from businesses locally. I mean, we've had in-kind contributions, like Joanne was talking about, the solar system stroll. We had businesses let us put up QR codes, that kind of thing. Wellington has been very supportive with this beer collaboration, but we know that there's a lot of science-oriented businesses in Guelph. If there are people who run foundations, any contacts you have, any way that people can help us find, like tap into the pools of money that we know are out there and that want to go towards worthy causes that like what we believe we're doing here. But anyways, also just sharing our information. Funding is the big hurdle that we have to overcome to really take things to the next level. But that being said, we're still doing a lot of great programming on a shoestring. Once we can hire some staff, that'll also really help us take things to the next level. We just need to get that sort of catalyst to propel us and really take things forward. But for now, other things you can do if you want to support us is just tell your friends and family, your colleagues, anybody who you think might be interested, tell them about us, tell them about what we're working on. Really just getting out there in the community is a huge part of what we're working on right now. And opportunities like this are fantastic to just kind of spread the word a bit. The next slide, we'll put up our social media handles, our website, our email address, so you can follow us, subscribe. We have a newsletter. You can also come to our events. We haven't officially announced them or released tickets yet, but Joanne described what we've got coming up in the next month, a bunch of really fun adult-oriented events because they're for this beer launch. But we're going to have, you know, much more programming coming out over the, you know, forever, basically. So anytime you want to come and support us in person, that's great. Any people that you think we should connect with in terms of partnerships, like we've already done a lot of work with local organizations, but if there's any that you know of that you didn't see on that list that Joanne shared or you didn't hear her describe, if you're listening, we're really open to hearing about potential partners, being introduced to people. That sort of networking has been really impactful so far for us. And like I said earlier, we're very interested in collaboration. We don't want to compete with anybody. This is a collaborative endeavor. So anybody that we might want to work with that you have on your radar, we would love to hear about it. So here, I'm going to read these out. We'll also make sure that they're posted. I don't know if Phil or Tanya, if it's possible to like post somewhere on the Breezy Breakfast page or something.
Yeah, we will post them for you. For sure.
Okay, great. So anybody who's listening,
that's great.
But for now, yeah, so we are, our website is royalcityscience.ca. Our email address is royalcityscience@gmail.com. On Twitter, we're at royalcitysci. So that's Royal City and then SCI. On Instagram, we're at royalcityscience. So those are all the places to find us. If you're interested in getting more involved, I mean, another thing that we mentioned, we do have this advisory committee. If you're somebody who really wants to make a contribution of your time and your talent, please get in touch with us. I think at this point, we'll hand it back over to Phil for questions. He mentioned in the chat that he's got a bunch. So please go ahead. And thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, wow. I think I'll just start with the wow, because you've really inspired people. I'm just going to read a couple of comments. I won't attribute them to anyone right now, but here's what you evoked from people that sent me private chat messages. Holy, I'm on fire. exclamation mark. I am sure that does not mean the individual is a heretic and is about to be burned at the stake. The one that fills me full of dread is from my wife. Definitely a need. And she considers the need so important. She, by the way, was known as Ms. Frizzle when she taught science, that she had just told me, didn't ask me, but told me, said, I'm donating $100 today. Is that okay? That takes $100 away from my guitar shopping. The kind of enthusiasm that you've generated, I think, is very important to continue promoting throughout the community. And I think that the only way that science can generate more enthusiasm is through questions and beer launching event. I love the fact that you've made reference to the dark matter quantum lager. From my understanding of quanta, the possibilities are endless, and I'm certainly looking forward to that if we put it in the infinite probability generator. I got a few questions for you, and let's take a look at this one first of all. Tanya has a question on ethics, and Tanya, I was wondering, would you like to ask that question yourself, please?
Okay, sure. I guess I think that the conversation about science and ethics is important because, as we learned in Jurassic Park, that movie, just because something can be done doesn't necessarily mean that it should be done. So how would you engage people in those kinds of conversations?
I could talk a bit about this. So, like I was saying at the very beginning, we see science as this interdisciplinary thing. And I think that a lot of these sort of failures of science that you see are when it is isolated in a silo, and it's just, what can we learn and how can we apply it? And, you know, we saw this with like nuclear weapons. That's a great example of, we did it, but we shouldn't have, because there wasn't that integration of other perspectives, other disciplines. So I think moving forward, looking at science as something that incorporates ethics, philosophy, and I think the social and cultural context in which science operates is really, really important. I think also when you have more multicultural, interdisciplinary sort of approaches to science, it sort of quiets down that, like, can we voice of science. I think having those contexts is really important. So I think that's because this is something that we as the leaders of this group understand, it will be represented in the programming. I think a lot of the opportunities that we'll have to have presenters and lectures and events, as well as the exhibits and the displays, I think all of that is going to include these other perspectives, the context in which science operates. And I think that that's a good way to sort of address these things. We won't have any Jurassic Park moments, I promise.
I think that's a really good answer, Kate. Just by way of filling that in, when I was doing graduate work, I had the thrill, and I mean that, probably the greatest thrill of my life, other than my family, to work with the papers of Bertrand Russell, which gave me access to the papers of Albert Einstein, Frederick Joliot-Curie, Marie Curie, Max Born, and Niels Bohr. The reason that these are important is the point that you made about nuclear technology. Virtually all of those individuals were exposed to nuclear technology and renounced it, including Robert Oppenheimer. The one that didn't was William Telfer, if I got his name correctly. But nonetheless, the principle of ethics and science is one that is very, very important. And the issue of playing God is equally important. So the question that was asked by both Scott and by me, where's the place for religion in this? And I think that too is equally an important tangent on the issue of ethics.
Oh, I'm happy to address this one too, but we'll pass over to you, Joanne, if you have anything. For me personally, I have a relationship with religion and with science. My parents are both Anglican ministers. My mother's on the call. Hello, mommy. So I grew up in the church, and then I came to science as an adult. And I'm not a particularly religious person, but I have deep respect for religious traditions and spiritual perspectives on life. And I think one of the areas where we see people turning away from science and from critical thinking and from, you know, some of the issues that we talked about earlier that are so pressing and so science oriented, but that people turn away from, a lot of the time that I think has to do with feeling that there's like a divide, science versus religion, science versus spirituality, science versus, you know, mysticism. And I think that that is a false dichotomy that should be dismantled. So building connections for people between whoever they are, wherever they're coming from, and welcoming them into science and presenting science in ways that are relatable and open, and recognizing that science does not answer every single question in the world. Science cannot possibly tell you everything about your existence and your experience of life. And I think that one of the sort of sins of science over the years has been the belief that it can answer all these questions and it's the only way of understanding the world. And that just doesn't hold up anymore. So that's certainly not the approach we would take. I think there are many different facets of life that can enrich people's experience. For me, science is one of them. And I find it very spiritually fulfilling to understand a little bit about the universe, to look up at the cosmos and marvel at the glory of existence, you know? And so there's a lot of common ground between religion, spirituality, science. So I think part of the work of the Science Center would be to share these perspectives and try to break down these barriers. So that's sort of my philosophical view. I don't know if Joanne, if you have anything to add to that.
Kate, that was beautiful. I mean, I grew up raised in a very religious family, went to church every weekend. I've kind of fallen away from organized religion, but when it's so core to who you were as a young person, it's always part of you. And I have profound respect for religion, for spirituality, for its role that it plays in people's lives. And again, I completely agree. It's a false dichotomy. It's not science versus religion. And there's absolutely ways that we can work together and build some bridges. I mean, Kate and I didn't know Kate before Rail City Science at all. And it's just been so great to meet Kate and to start working with her and see, you know, find such common ground and to find such common ground among all of the other people that have jumped in and joined this advisory group. It's been honestly phenomenal, from this crazy little idea that Orvax and I had, you know, a year and a half ago, to this in no time. It just has blown me away. And I've got goosebumps thinking about what we've done and what we will do over the next few years.
Yeah, great. Just a couple of comments on religion. My background is theology and philosophy, and that has never had any sort of detrimental impact upon my own personal faith, which I do not impose upon anyone because you'd all think I'm crazy. But the important part to remember is that, first of all, the foundations of Western science arose through Islam, and that cannot be denied. Similarly, many people say, well, what about the Catholic Church and Galileo? What we need to recognize is that the Catholic Church was Galileo's sponsor, and Galileo would not have done any of the work that he did. The problem for Galileo did not arise with the Catholic Church, which was remarkably liberal. The problem arose from the hierarchy of the community and the culture in which Galileo was operating. And the threats Galileo posed were not necessarily to the church, but to the established social order. And so it leads to a question that I'm going to ask you really quickly before Tanya gets to some questions. And that is, what about the relationship between science and politics? It's clearly there is a relationship. We've seen that so much in the world today with so many things, hint, hint, US elections.
Yeah, I can jump in to start. I mean, science and politics are both things that exist within the context of our society. And of course, they influence each other. One would hope that science influences politics more than the other way around. Of course, what we see is that that's not true. It's a mutual relationship. And so that's a reality that you have to recognize and respond to. So understanding that people's political orientation might affect the way they view science and scientific information is an important part of understanding how to reach people, how to engage with them. It's about meeting people where they are. And if where they are is that their views on science are informed by their political affiliation, that's where you meet them. That's how where you begin the conversation and welcome them in. There's absolutely no point saying that, oh, well, this person, you know, is a member of this party and therefore we're just not gonna bother. We're not gonna bother with them because they don't believe in climate change or whatever. No, these are people that need to be welcomed in to and communicated with respect and understanding. And I think that, yeah, it's just a reality that needs to be acknowledged. And I think also science, there is a responsibility to try to communicate science effectively so that even, you know, even when a issue like climate change becomes politicized, you want the right information, that the correct, you know, scientific information to be out there and available and accessible. So I think, yeah, it's between science and politics, it's a relationship that needs to be acknowledged and negotiated.
Yeah, and I would just add that, I think Kate sort of touched on this already, really, that trying to reach any particular audience is really the $64,000 question in science communication. Everything you do in science communication is audience, audience, audience. It's like, you know, location, location, location. How you communicate, how you, the medium that you use, the words that you use, the analogies that you use, everything is based on who you are talking to. And, you know, we have to figure out ways to reach those who aren't necessarily seeking information on science, right? And that's really the most challenging aspect of science communication is it's great to draw in all these kids who just love science, who just can't get enough of it and come through the door in droves. But we also want to communicate with the people who are not seeking out the Science Center, right? We want to find a way to talk to those members of our community as well and help them to feel more welcome and more that this is a place for them. And that is a huge challenge, but it's definitely something that we need to be continually working on. And, you know, the idea of being able to set up at a farmer's market or at Hillside or, you know, at these community events, you're going to happen upon people who are wandering past your giant inflatable dome and say, what is this, right? And you draw them in and you talk. And that's really, I think, what we need to try to do more of. I mean, I'm not discounting the encouraging all those little ones who are like so passionate about science and helping them find a place to engage with their enthusiasm and their creativity and their passion. But to me, a huge part of this is also finding ways to connect with the people who are not necessarily seeking out science.
Great. Just a couple of points, lest we forget. Prince Henry of Portugal, Prince Henry the Navigator, Catherine the Great, were very strong sponsors of science education. And the principles of science and physics were used to establish the principles of the French and the American revolutions. And that's not to be missed. There was quite a complement between science and politics in the past, and let's hope we can recover that. Tanya, I know we've got a lot of curious-minded people in the audience, and I'm hoping that you've been able to collect some questions.
Yes, indeed I have. So Morgan wanted to ask, can early exposure to positive STEM experiences, especially for young women, help us have more people understand the importance of trades in the future?
Yeah, I saw that question. Great question, Morgan. I absolutely hope so. I think there is such a challenge in the trades now with you know, an aging population that we do need more young people to consider it as an exciting option for their futures. And if we can encourage that with more hands-on, more interactive, I think it can't but help. You mentioned, I think you mentioned your daughter in the comments. I have a daughter in grade 11 right now at GCBI, and she took the girls only auto shop course in grade 9 and in grade 10, and she absolutely loved it. And that course and the instructors, I mean, the teachers were phenomenal. But that kind of experience of like taking apart a lawnmower engine and putting it back together again. I have a video of her somewhere. I can't find it for you, but she'd kill me if I showed it anyway. They took the engine apart, put it back together again, and it wouldn't start. It wouldn't start. They got it started on like the fifth pull, and the shrieks of excitement and like, oh, I my God, all teary just watching it. It was so amazing because that's what kids need. They spend all their time staring at screens and watching simulations and watching videos. It's not the same thing as ripping something apart and putting it back together again and getting it to work. I mean, it never works the first time. And you don't learn that when you watch it on a video, right? So doing things where we can get kids to build stuff, it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Figure it out, get it working. It's like, I mean, it's the light bulb moment in a classroom times a million, right? It is just so amazing to see. So yes, absolutely. Kids need more opportunities to build stuff and have it not work and fix it. And if we can provide that with a physical space where they can go on a Saturday afternoon and mess around, then I can't see that not leading to more engagement in the trades.
Excellent, because I remember when I was in high school, a friend of mine wanted to take shop, but she was totally discouraged because apparently the language used there would not be fitting for a lady. Okay, so I've got a question from Scott. He would like to know, are you collaborating with other local centers to see what works and doesn't? He's talking about Kitchener, for example.
Yeah, having Great Orbax as my co-founder, he has done a number of events at the museum. So he has connections with the folks at the museum and has had some informal talks with them. There is another group in Waterloo called Launch. I don't know if anybody here has heard of them. They're relatively new. They're kind of like about 2 or 3 years ahead of us in terms of when they started. Their idea is to build a physical space that was donated by a developer in a condominium high rise. So he has donated, I think it's two floors, the first two floors of this high rise to be a space for informal science programming. Their focus is all about, they've been running programming until they have their space. It's not operational yet. But their focus with programming is actually kind of a cool twist. They've been running it as like intramural sports. So you sign up for Launch, and your kid joins a team, and then they have like competitions on building things and like robotics. I mean, it's Waterloo, so there's very, very much kind of the tech angle of it, but it's kind of a cool twist on having regular weekly online, they've been sessions with your team, and you have a coach, and they build stuff, and then you have like competitions. But we've had great communication with them. We are a member of the Canadian Association of Science Centers. We joined very early on, and their team have been fantastic in supporting us, helping us make connections. We just had a connection made with Science North in Sudbury, which I'm going to be following up on in the next few days. I'm actually on research leave next year, so I'm hoping very much to be able to travel a little bit once things ease up, go up to Sudbury. You know, there's also a group in Windsor, Canada South, I believe. And they're a much smaller operation, but weird little small world thing. That was actually started by a physicist at the University of Windsor who I know through physics. So I didn't even know that this was a thing he had done on the side. So Bill and I have had a number of great chats as well. I definitely want to go down there and see their operation. I grew up in Toronto in the West End, So the Ontario Science Center was like, I was constantly pestering my parents to take me to whenever I could. So for sure, we want to make connections with them. They're kind of, you know, a bigger entity, but for sure, we definitely want to make connections with them. I know fairly well the person who runs Spark, TeleSpark in Calgary. So we've been starting to make those connections. But yeah, for sure, we want to learn. We don't want to reinvent the wheel, but we also are going to put our own Guelph stamp on things.
Excellent. So I've got one more question. Given the rise of technology, which sometimes makes it difficult to always believe what we see anymore, do you see a physical science center in town as a way to counteract science skepticism?
Yes. Short answer, yes. And I mean, I think we've touched on this only a few times, but in general, I think giving people an opportunity to learn not only about sort of the process of science and the accumulated knowledge that we call science, but also like science literacy, understanding how to think critically about information that you're receiving, how to look for the context in which you're receiving some kind of science or information. I think that's super important, and that is the kind of thing that'll be woven into all the programming, whether it's exhibits and displays and interactive things or talks or like, you know, pub nights or any of that kind of programming. You have to paint the whole picture of science. It's not just here, memorize the periodic table. It's what is science? How do we do science? How do we come to it? And learning that really does give people the tools to think more critically about science that they're hearing about in the news, on the internet, through word of mouth, you know, on Facebook. Like there's a lot of ways for people to get misinformation. So teaching science literacy, just like media literacy, anything like that, that's so important in this day and age, especially for young people who are just so plugged into the internet. I mean, it's really important to learn that. So yeah, definitely.
Great. Now I've got four quick questions, I think, but are very, very important. First of all, I'll start off with a comment from Ted. I think Ted made a remark about the importance of students journeying to other locations, that this, in fact, is a fulfilling adventure for many, many kids who have never seen Toronto or Sudbury or seen another environment. And it's part of the extension of really coming to terms with our whole community. And I think that's something that should not be missed. I've always felt people that get out in the world understand different cultures, different values far more successfully. And that also includes experimenting with science. So I have a few questions. They're simple ones. People are very worried. For those that know ORBAX, will ORBAX still be working with Royal City Science to promote science in his own unique way?
I don't think you could stop him from doing it his way.
He's like the heart and soul of this operation. There's no way to stop him. I mean, I've known ORBAX for many, many years now. We both are paid by the Department of Physics at the University of Guelph, and we've worked together on a whole bunch of projects. But working closely with him, launching a nonprofit organization, turning it into a registered charity, I kind of throw myself into things and I don't necessarily know where they're going to go. But this one has been just such a fantastic journey and I've learned so much about him. And it's just been absolutely a pleasure to work alongside him. He lives and breathes this stuff. This is what he lives for. I will tell you, there is an event coming up soon, beginning of June, that is a signature ORBAX and Pepper event that will be promoting Royal City Science. It maybe involves Wellington Brewery. I'm maybe not going to say anything more about that at this point, but keep the first week of June open because there's something big happening with ORBAX and Pepper at Wellington, and Royal City Science is 100% behind it.
Yeah, we have to follow us on social media to find out what the mysterious, intriguing thing Joanne is alluding to is.
A little bit of a tease there. That's great. For anybody that's not seen an Arbex show, I guarantee you, you will not forget it, especially if you go to the adult show, which is something else. Hillside this year, any plans?
We haven't heard from them. We haven't, we should follow up with them. We were hoping to have the portable planetarium for this summer. The funding partnership for that with the donation from the Stevens Estate has not yet come through. So we don't have the planetarium. We were hoping very much to be able to go there this summer. But yeah, we will reach out with them, see if there's some, maybe we can get an Orbox and Pepper show happening at Hillside on the Rainbow Stage. That would be super fun.
That'd be fabulous. Most important question, and this one, I'm sorry, Joanne, is for Kate. Kate, what was it like working with Bill Nye?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. Cause yeah, I've been lucky enough to work with Bill. He's the CEO of the Planetary Society, who are my employers and have been for the last 9 years. So I've worked with Bill for a long time and he's fantastic. He's been obviously very inspirational to me in my science outreach ambitions. The Planetary Society was also founded by Carl Sagan, who was another hero of mine as a science educator, a communicator, really conveying the majesty of science and the cosmos in particular. So I've been very fortunate obviously I didn't cross paths with Carl Sagan, but to work, you know, with his legacy and to work with Bill Nye, really great role models. And Bill is a very supportive person. He wants to help get the next generation of science educators in place and equipped to sort of take over for him once he someday retires. I think he'll keep working until he drops dead, but I think because he's so passionate about it. And that's the thing, people who work in science outreach are passionate about it. That's how we as an organization have been doing so much over the last 2 years with no paid staff. People care about this. This is why we also have such great collaborative relationships with other science centers offering advice, other organizations in Guelph partnering with us. Everybody is working towards the same thing and we all believe in it so strongly. So I took your question about Bill, I turned it into just a pitch for science people in general, but it really, it's a great community to be involved in. And yeah, Bill's definitely been inspirational. Hopefully if we get a science center built, I can get him to come and speak at it because he spoke in Guelph just before the pandemic and it was a sold out show that Orbex presented at as well. Good, yeah. Yeah, so it would be great to be able to draw on that resource.
Great. Thanks to both of you. For anybody that's interested in reading, two good books to read that are light reading are Carl Sagan's Contact and also a book on philosophy, which is about the inquiring mind, a lovely little novel, Sophie's World. Both of them should inspire you to think further about science. And when we have our book show coming up in a month, I think I get a comment on those two books. Tanya, over to you with announcements. Thanks very much to our guest today. You've certainly inspired people. And as I said, you've raised at least $100. So it's already been paid, as I've just been told. So let's hear it from Tanya. What's coming up?
There are going to be quite a few election town halls coming up, as you can imagine. The Sustainable Development Goals and 10C are hosting a provincial election candidate town hall. It's tonight from 4 to 6 p.m. I think the in-person might be sold out, or it's free, but it might be full. But you can go online and register via Eventbrite. And just please Google Eventbrite 10C Provincial Town Hall Guelph. The Guelph Wellington Coalition for Social Justice is also having an election town hall on Thursday, the 12th of May from 7 to 9 p.m. Submit a question to electiontownhall.2022@gmail.com. The candidates are going to be from Green, Liberal, NDP, PC, Communist, and none of the above. The New Blue candidate has not been confirmed. the Guelph Chamber of Commerce will have an election Q&A on Wednesday, the 18th of May, between 4 and 6 p.m. And please go to guelphchamber.com to register. There's a special council meeting on May 16th. And on the agenda is the Clare Maltby Secondary Plan. Please know that this is the last big chunk of green space in Guelph. So please register to delegate by 10 a.m. on Friday, the 13th of May. And finally, next week on Breezy Breakfast is our first edition of the provincial election candidates. And next week, it will be Peter McSherry from the PC Party and James Parr from the NDP. That's it for the announcements. Thank you very much. I guess that's a wrap.
Have a great week. Thanks, everybody. Everyone.
And that's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Each week, Breezy Breakfast meets via Zoom. If you are interested in joining us, please email us at breezybullhorn@gmail.com. If you like what you hear, please consider a donation by e-transfer to breezybullhorn@gmail.com. Thanks to our organizing committee, Kevin Bowman, Tanya Gavard, Morgan Danny Hanna, and Phil Out. Music for the Breezy Breakfast has been provided by Jules Jern. I'm Jiayu Yan, and I produce the Breezy Breakfast podcasts.